This is the Oanda Podcast.
This is the Oanda Market Insights Podcast, talking to Oanda senior market analysts across the globe. And today we're joined by Ed Moyer in New York. Good afternoon from London, Ed. How are you doing?
I'm well. I'm happy to be done with this volatile week. So much to cover, so let's get into it.
Absolutely huge week. Where should we start? Well, let's start with the breaking news this afternoon. And that, of course, was the latest non-farm payroll, the jobs report from the United States. It was a complex report, and I would imagine that investors will be disappointed by today's data, particularly as there's been much more positive economic data issued recently. But the numbers aren't that impressive. They're disappointing, aren't they?
It was disappointing. I think it is a complex report. We have to, you know, remember there's a lot of seasonal factors in play. We're dealing with the base effects of COVID. Surprisingly, there was, I think this one caught everyone off by guard, but there was a big decrease of 161,000 jobs in state and local education. I mean, schools they reopened in September, so that really had a lot of economists scratching their heads. But I think in the end, you could see that the labor market recovery is still dealing with the Delta variant impact, but it has done nothing to derail what the Fed is likely to do on November 3rd, and that's to formally announce the tapering of its asset purchases. So I think it's not a great report. Most economists missed this one. I think only one of the 71 surveyed had their estimate slightly below this number. So, you know, expectations were high. You know, the consensus was for 500,000. The whisper number was about 200,000. So for some people, it was, kind of anticipated. But I think you're going to see that this is still, you know, an economy that has a labor market that is improving. And I think that when we consider September was the end of the pandemic unemployment benefits, you're probably going to see more incentivized Americans to return to the workforce in October, as they'll have no more benefits. So I think you're probably going to see the economy is still going to head in the right direction. But this was a disappointing report.
Delving a little bit deeper into the figures, the unemployment rate fell from 5.2% in August to 4.8%. There were notable job gains in hospitality, retail, transportation. But with 7.7 million people out of work, unemployment remains considerably higher than it was before the pandemic. And I was just wondering, we have in this country, in the United Kingdom, a labor shortage. Is it the same problem in the US? Is it a question of marrying the two? You've got the people who are unemployed, you've got these positions which are open. It's just about getting the two together, or maybe it's just not that possible because they don't have the skills.
It's a similar story. I think, you know, next week we'll also get the jobs opening report, which is supposed to remain steady at 10.9 million. So we currently have 10.9 million jobs available. So that's a pretty significant number. And I think when you take a look at the unemployment rate, as you mentioned, it did provide a for many people a surprise drop. You know, 4.8%, we're in the fours. And you know, the Fed's longer term goal is 4%. So I think you're seeing the optimism there is growing, that we're you know, probably at some point next year going to see a complete recovery here. What's interesting though is the reason we had the labor force participation rate drop was because women are leaving the job market. And that, you know, is mainly because for a lot of households, you know, the child care burden still remains. I think you're going to see that hopefully will get better in the coming months. But I think this is a very complex report, and you're probably going to see that the recovery of jobs is going to take a lot longer than many people anticipated. But I think there is still strong optimism that as COVID cases continue to head lower, and now that we have more solutions in fighting this virus, the COVID pill now, and I think children are going to be able to get vaccinated, there's strong optimism that, we're going to see a lot more normalcy next year, and that should benefit the employment report in these coming months.
Okay, let's turn to a different subject, and commodities, energy, and so on. All the headlines in this country, well, not all of them, but a good tranche of them, have been about the price of natural gas and, of course, oil as well. We did have a meeting from OPEC Plus earlier in the week where it was decided there'd be no additional output. As far as the natural gas price is concerned, well, that soared, as we all know by now, but then came right back down again after those choice comments from Vladimir Putin, who has offered to ease Europe's gas crisis. I mean, it says something when we have to doff our caps to Vladimir Putin, praying that he can actually help bring down the price of gas, because long term, or certainly medium term, this is very worrying, isn't it, when households are so dependent on their gas and electricity. You could have a situation even in this country where people just can't afford to pay.
It was definitely a wild week for energy prices. And I think what we're starting to see is it's not even really cold out there, at least for the Northern Hemisphere. And you're seeing tremendous demand already for natural gas, for crude. And I think what the key takeaway is we're going to have higher oil prices in the short term. Natural gas is going to remain very volatile. But I think, the headlines of Putin, President Putin saving the day, and, when his comments, it basically helped erase a 40% jump in Europe's natural gas prices. And I think right now you're going to see, the path for, how this situation gets addressed is really complicated. And I think that you're going to probably see, just focusing on oil right now, the oil market was already in deficit. And I think we started to see there was some mixed demand because of the Delta variant impact over these past couple of months, but there was strong arguments being made that, OPEC should consider increasing that November output goal. They outlined 400,000. I think that was a conservative estimate. And basically what OPEC's doing is they're saying we're not worried about U.S. production coming back, and they're pretty content in benefiting from higher oil prices and surging demand. I think that this market is going to stay in deficit, and the decision by OPEC Plus, it triggered a response from the White House. There was that Financial Times report where it basically surprised a lot of people when they reported that, the U.S. is considering releasing their emergency oil reserves. And that triggered a major reversal in oil. But then the White House had to step back their comments. The Energy Secretary Granholm, she basically said all tools are on the table, but she didn't commit that we were going to see the U.S. tap their strategic petroleum reserves. And I think that's a card that the U.S. will have to play when, if we're dealing with $90 oil or $100 oil, and if we're having a much colder winter. So I think it's too early to play that card. And right now, I think you're going to probably see, the gas crisis in Europe, what that has done. Earlier in the week, Saudi Aramco's CEO noted that because of that shortfall in natural gas, we've seen a pickup of over 500,000 barrels per day in crude. So, this market, oil market, is going to run hot. I think it's going to be tight, and you're going to probably see that oil prices are going to be extremely volatile, and you're going to see government leaders globally just try to address this. You're going to probably hear lots more chatter about China, India, and the U.S. Getting ready to tap their reserves to thwart this move in prices. But it's becoming a very, I think, one-way trade. And with that, you're seeing a lot of investors they're looking to have protection here with higher gas and oil prices. And right now, you're probably going to see this market is going to remain hot, and it's going to be really hard to derail that unless you start to have expectations that we're not going to have a very cold winter.
And what is unavoidable, of course, is the likelihood of much higher inflation coming up. I've heard some commentators this week suggest 6% in this country alone. What's it like for you over there in terms of those sorts of numbers? I mean, you're already higher than us anyway, but where are those numbers predicted to go?
Well, this energy crisis is pretty significant. It's affecting everything. Even BASF, they're saying they're not going to be making more pesticides. I think you're going to see that this is going to, you know, eventually work its way into food prices, which have already been soaring. I think that you know, when we consider, you know, the inflation we've seen, you know, and depending on your region, Latin America, emerging markets, they've been dealing with runaway inflation. I think you're seeing for many countries, it's at the highest level in over a decade. And I think that, you know, the fear is that, you know, it's going to take a while for those pricing pressures to ease. So we live in a market right now where you've had many central banks already start to deliver quicker than expected tightening cycles. And it's going to really complicate the global economic recovery. A lot of the inflation is transitory. Some of it will definitely persist. So I think that, we're going to be extremely inflation focused, I think, over the, you know, the next 6 to 12 months, as that will really dictate, I think, how investors allocate their positions. But right now, it's very, disruptive to the global economic recovery. And I think we're, you know, a lot of people are anticipating that, you know, this is the peak for large parts of that inflation. And I think that it still can run a little bit hotter, but I do anticipate that eventually we're going to, early in the first quarter, start to see prices come back down. But the concern for me is food prices. I think that could really be a game changer to a lot of these bullish outlooks for global equities.
Talking of things going up, massive moves in Bitcoin this week, weren't there, Ed? And now around $54,000, I think, last time I looked. Prices hitting a near 5-month high. So my question that I asked you off air before was, you know, is Bitcoin becoming the new gold? Do people rush to Bitcoin during times of concern?
This week it looked like it. It was very surprising to see, earlier in the week we had risk aversion. We had, you know, global equities were selling off, and you had a stronger dollar emerging and look at Bitcoin. Bitcoin was surging. Bitcoin was rallying. It became clear early in the week that you've seen not just retail but institutional traders. They really have changed their approach in cryptos. The long-term holder mentality is firmly in place, and right now, the calls for an extended consolidation because of the regulatory fears, those completely got erased after you heard two key comments. In the past week, we've heard Fed Chair Powell saying that he's not looking to ban cryptocurrencies, and you had a very similar comment from SEC's Gensler. So two of the more powerful regulatory figures that people were fearing were going to disrupt cryptocurrencies basically said crypto's here to stay, and that gave the green light for a lot of investors. I think that you're seeing this quicker than expected recovery. I've maintained a fairly upbeat stance on cryptocurrencies, but I think, you know, some of these signs from Powell and Gensler really just, I think, were the fuel to this rally. And right now, you're probably going to see that there's just a lot of momentum behind this move. You had a lot of money on the sidelines that were waiting, and a couple of years ago, people were saying it's digital gold. I think now Bitcoin traders would be offended by labeling it gold, because gold has really disappointed over the past year, despite how well many risky assets have performed, and especially commodities. So I think you're seeing this is a major moment here in cryptos, and there's optimism too that in the next few months we're going to get that Bitcoin ETF. So it just looks like the regulatory fears have somewhat passed, even though we're still going to get the Fed's paper in the next month or so on central bank digital currencies. You're still seeing a market that is trying to get a better sense of, you know, this energy consumption on cryptos. How bad of an impact is that? Will we see ESG concerns completely alleviated to allow more Wall Street money to come into the space? But for now, it seems that the crypto scams, the exchanges going under, all those fears have really alleviated for in the short term, and Bitcoin's got a lot of momentum here. So I think next week the volatility will remain elevated. It could actually happen over the weekend too. I think I would not be surprised if we saw a move to either 50 or 60,000. But I think long term you're still looking at higher prices. After a big surge like this, you're probably going to see a lot of short retail positions jump on the bandwagon, and typically you see those guys get squeezed out before we push higher. So volatility will remain amplified here.
Talking of next week and talking of the Fed, it's going to be a busy old week, isn't it? Including a potential decision from President Biden on Jay Powell and whether to keep the man in the job.
Next week is big for the Fed. I think, and I wish we've had more time over the past couple of weeks to discuss the Fed trading controversy, but that is an important story. About a month ago, we might have discussed this, but I would have said the odds of Powell getting renominated were at least 95%. Then we had this Fed trading scandal. And what's really complicated, this renomination is that you have Senator Elizabeth Warren, who is just going after Powell. And it's important to remember that she's a progressive, she's a Democrat. Democrats right now are fighting to get their economic package pushed through Congress. And it looks like that the conservative Democrats are going to have to concede a little bit. It's not 3.5 economic trillion package. It's probably going to be closer to 2 trillion or even possibly less. And you have this Fed trading scandal, which impacted Vice Chair Clarida. It also was followed by two resignations from Boston Fed President Rosengren and also Dallas Fed President Kaplan, who will take place next week. So I think you're seeing, and medical conditions were the reason for one of them, but really the trading scandal would have, I think, led to that as well. So you have all this pressure now that, under your watch, you had this bad behavior. And the timing of these trades is really, I think, drawing a lot of scrutiny. Bloomberg also reported that Clarida moved about between $1 and $5 million on a bond fund on February 26th of 2020. So, the low in stocks was March. So you're seeing all this pressure now start to grow for Biden to make a change. The problem is the front runner to replace Powell was going to be Lael Brainard, but she might be dragged down in this mess of this trading scandal as far as the oversight. And so there's so much complication on what the Biden administration is going to do. And the reason why next week is so key is that you have the term of Randy Quarles. He's the vice chair for supervision. His term ends on the 13th. So it's expected that, you could see a decision by President Biden on whether or not he'll renominate Powell. And I think right now that is still the base case. My confidence level, it's still high, but I'd say it's probably more like 70-30 that Powell will get renominated. I think, you know, the progressives, and there is a growing amount of Democrats that want Powell removed, but I think that will likely lead to some other concessions on the debt limit and overall spending packages that will be seen in the coming months. So a lot to deal with. And I think what you're also going to see, you know, the whole, you know, focus next week, you know, that is going to be a big part of it. But we're going to hear from two of the more dovish members, Fed's Evans and Fed Brainard. And I think a lot of investors are going to want to see, you know, are they going to change their tune about inflation being transitory? And that could really, I think, get the bond market going again, get the bond market sell-off resuming and sending yields higher if they start to become more concerned about inflation. We'll hear from several other members, but I think the focus will be on those dovish members. And it's a week that's also filled with the Fed's minutes. And I think that you're going to see that everyone's going to be looking to see, you know, what is going to be the tipping point to make some of these Fed members just say, no, we were wrong about inflation.
Fascinating. For reasons of geographic balance, we should also contemplate what might happen outside of the Fed and outside of the United States in the next week. What else should we look out for?
Well, next week, we have there is a lot going on. I think you're going to see a lot of investors. They're going to be focused on the IMF World Bank meetings. You're going to have lots of influential leaders speaking throughout the entire week with respect to economic data. And we also have the G20 trade ministers, they're meeting in Italy. That starts on Tuesday. The IMF will also on Tuesday release their World Economic Outlook and their Global Financial Stability Report. That also will, I think, provide some downgrades possibly to the outlook for next year, but as far as the key data points, I think for me, Tuesday is going to be a big day because you'll have the German ZEW survey expectations, you'll have UK jobless claims and unemployment data released. That's going to be very important to watch. And I think we can't ignore earnings season. That kicks off on Wednesday, JP Morgan reports. Then we'll hear from the rest of the banks in the coming days. One other focal point too, that we had Golden Week this week in China, and today they did return for Friday trade, but it wasn't the normal trading flows and volumes. And I think you're going to see there's going to be a big focus on China next week too. We also have a raft of Chinese data, trade, their medium-term lending facilities. We also get their CPI readings as well. So that's going to be key. For the U.S., the main data points will be U.S. CPI and U.S. retail sales, CPI on Wednesday, retail sales on Friday. I think you're going to see that a lot of traders, they're turning cautious right now. You know, there's good reasons to be optimistic long term, but there's still so many risks. This energy crisis is really, I think, going to be on the front page. And I think that if you start to see persistent, rising prices here, that's going to really, I think, damage the outlook for certain countries. I think the U.S. would be able to still remain attractive, even if we push another 5% higher here in oil prices. But anything beyond that, then you're going to have a lot of nervousness.
Batten down the hatches, Ed. It's going to be a bumpy ride, I think. Hate to say that, but I've got a funny feeling about it. Thanks very much for joining us today. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too.
CO Ander Podcast.